Blog Talk Radio.
Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. For anyone still mourning the departure of The Far Side and Calvin and Hobbes from your local newspaper's comics page, cheer up. There's a weird new kid on the street, and he'll make you forget about your favorite strips from the last century. Leo is the creation of Mark Tatuli, and he's a fresh brand of weird and wonderful, now appearing in more than 250 newspapers, with more adding the strip daily. If Far Side creator Gary Larson and Calvin creator Bill Watterson had mated, Leo is the character they would have produced. Tatuli's brainchild, Leo, and that's spelled L-I-O, is a young boy who combines elements of mad scientist, comic strips, science fiction, and the Addams Family. And get this, Leo never speaks. Mark, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Has Leo ever spoken in the strip?
No.
Will he?
Well.
And he never will.
Yes.
So,
I mean, others around him may speak, and he may get visitations from other comic strip characters, but he'll never actually talk.
And, you know, I was talking to a friend whose history of comics goes back even further than mine, and we both came to the same connection. We remembered a character called Henry.
Sure.
Is that close to Leo's lineage in some way?
Well, they're both pantomime strips, what's called a pantomime strip, and those are basically strips that are driven by pictures instead of dialogue. So characters revealed by action rather than words.
Mm.
And, you know, I used to love pantomime strips when I was a kid. Henry is one, as you mentioned, and there's also was Ferdinand, which was, I believe that was not produced in the United States, but it did get circulation here.
Mm. So Henry was certainly a strip that you were aware of.
Oh, yeah.
And there really hasn't been another one like that in some time.
No, not since like the 1950s. And I just thought with the space that they dial down to, that they actually allot to comic strips, I thought that it would be fun to do a comic strip that didn't have any dialogue and any word balloons taking up any of that space, so I could, you know, utilize the entire space for illustration. It's great fun on Sundays.
Is Leo mute, or is it, he just doesn't speak in the strip?
Yeah, he doesn't speak. His father doesn't speak. None of the characters really speak. Somebody might, you know, show up that you would expect to speak, like, say, Kathy from the Kathy comic strip, or, you know, maybe Calvin and Hobbes or something like that. But and you would expect them to speak because they speak within their world. But within Leo's world, pretty much nobody speaks. There's sound effects, and there's, you know, billboards and so forth, but there's no actual dialogue.
Have you ever, in the time you've been doing this strip, have you had an idea? You woke up in the morning or in the middle of the night or you're in the shower, wherever you get your ideas, you've had an idea for the strip that would have required him to say something, and then you went, oh, and you slap yourself on the head and go, oh, that's right, he doesn't talk. Not going to work.
No, because I don't think that way when I do these strips. It's all visual, you know. So my brain is just switched to in that mode, you know. So it's odd because I do have another comic strip called Heart of the City, and it is dialogue driven or script driven, and I hear their voices, and they, you know, I put them in situations and I see how they react, and there's dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But with Leo, because I don't, you know, put any dialogue in, I just don't hear a voice.
It must require a tremendous amount of, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, focus, to not want to slip and go to words, especially because you have the other strip where you're used to, you know, putting words in people's mouths.
Well, again, you know, I just don't even think in terms of that.
Mm.
No, that's not even an option. You know, it's the other strip is dialogue-driven, and so, like I said, I hear the voices, but when it comes to Leo, I'm just thinking visually, just completely visually.
And what other rules have you set for this strip? What parameters are there?
There are no parameters.
Okay.
You know, it's really a basic concept. It's just Leo who lives with his father, and that's basically it. And, you know, and whatever I can come up with. I set no parameters because I didn't want to lock myself in. I mean, having no dialogue means that there's going to be no dialogue-driven gags, so I have to leave myself as open as possible to any kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So anything basically can happen.
Now, Mark, you mentioned that Leo lives with his father, and I wanted to ask you about that. Is there no mother?
There is no mother, no.
Is that is he a product of a broken home, or is it the Disney tradition of kids only have one parent? Or?
Well, I can't imagine that a sane woman would stay in that environment for too long. I mean, between the father and Leo, they're a couple of weirdos. So my guess is that she just about had it one day and just took off. But, you know, it makes things simpler because then there would be no dialogue between parents or anything. You know, the Leo's father just is kind of his guardian, more or less, and he just kind of goes with the flow.
Now, we frequently see Leo's father in fairly treacherous situations. How do you envision their relationship? Is he tolerant or is he in fear of his son?
Oh, he's just tolerant. He just kind of goes with it. He just wants to, you know, the interesting thing was that I had written the character of the father when I was out of work. I had lost my job, and I was feeling, you know, just, you know, useless. And, I kind of projected that onto this father character here, and he's kind of, you know, he doesn't really have a job. We never see him going off to work. And he just kind of sits around and watches TV and just kind of goes with the flow, you know. And weird things happen, but, you know, he doesn't ask too many questions because I don't think he really wants the answers.
Now, what are some of the, in your mind, some of the strangest things that have happened between Leo and his father?
Oh, my gosh. you know, every day is a new adventure, you know. They've been visited, you know, the father has, well, I guess one of the strangest things would be that the father went into the refrigerator to get, you know, bacon and eggs because he wanted to make bacon and eggs, and he found this enormous egg in the refrigerator. He was very pleased about that. And the final panel is the, you know, the egg had split open, and it was the alien from the Alien movie, the original movie.
Right,
wrapped
right.
Around his neck and was on his face. And, you know, Leo comes in and slaps his face, you know, like, oh, my God, he's getting into my experiments again. I would say that's among the most bizarre things. But those kind of things happen every day, and everything's fine the next day.
Right, well, that's the amazing thing. I mean, I love that. It's just like, you know, there's a giant octopus or something, and
right.
or you know. And Leo is so in command of his situation. I mean, is he... What elements of personality does he take from his creator, and what kind of things have you given him that you would like to have in your own personality, perhaps?
Oh, geez, you know, it's mostly about fear. When you're a little kid, everything is. I mean, I was afraid of everything because everything seemed so scary, you know, and things that were even designed for kids seemed so scary, you know. I mean. When you went and saw Sleeping Beauty, you know, the dragon in that was just, you know, really, really scary. Now, to adults taking their kid there, oh, this is a lovely fairy tale we're taking my child to. And then, you know, you get there and there's this enormous, you know, there's this evil-looking queen, the most evil-looking queen you ever saw, and she turns into a dragon and it just envelops the screen and it's really, really horrific. And, you know, same thing with book illustrations. You know, I remember being... fascinated by, you know, Grimm's fairy tales when I was a kid. You know, those stories are just downright sick.
Right.
You know, some of them, you know, that, you know, I remember, you know, the story of Tom Thumb, but you don't know that he actually is killed by a spider. You know, and there was this illustration in this Grimm's fairy tale of the spider kind of coming up on him, and Tom Thumb did battle with him, but the spider breathed his poisonous breath. And then basically killed Tom Thumb.
Right.
You know, and you know, that it was just, it's shocking for a kid, you know. So Leo's world is that way. Everything is kind of a shock or surreal or bizarre or scary.
Well, and I've read where you've compared Leo to the character that Haley Joel Osment played in The Sixth Sense, and that Leo's world is real. I mean, it's that is his world. But is he the only one in his world who kind of lives and functions the way he does, you know, surrounded by the monsters and the robots and animals and aliens?
Yeah, I'd say he's the most at peace with it.
Oh.
You know, and others, people just don't see those things, you know. They're kind of walking by, or they happen to have their back turned to the situation. It's kind of like it's his reality is just not acknowledged by other people. but they're there, and, you know, and sometimes, you know, it finds its way into other people's worlds, too. But for the most part, you know, we go on with our adult lives and not seeing the things that the kids are just deathly afraid of.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I apologize for even asking you to go behind the scenes and talk about some of these things, because I know if you talk to a comedian, the last thing a comedian wants to do is dissect a joke. But Leo is still so new to so many people, and, you know, we haven't had it for years and years yet. So, it, you know, it helps, I think, to explain a little bit. Now, how do you keep it fresh day after day, and how long have you been doing it now?
Well, let's see. It launched in newspapers last May. That would be May of 2006. I originally pitched the strip to my syndicate in May of 2005.
Mm.
So since May of 2005, I've been basically writing and drawing, you know. So it didn't hit papers till last May, but, you know, the time between when I pitched it and when it actually hit papers, I had to do a lot of writing and drawing. And, you know, just to, you know, find out how I actually wanted to draw it and how I wanted, you know, the tone to be. And you know, so I've been drawing it for, I would say, honestly, almost 2 years.
Mm. Is it still exciting to wake up to, or is it becoming work?
Oh, no, it's great. Only because, I would say mostly because there are no rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day I can do something different. I can take it to a new place. You know, it's always a surprise to me, and it's an amazing, amazing thing to have a job as a syndicated cartoonist. I couldn't be happier. I'll tell you, I don't know what I would do with myself if I weren't doing this.
Now, you have done other things, right?
Yeah.
What else have you done besides the Heart of the City?
I started working in the film business when I was like 19. And, you know, I worked in every aspect of production. I did shooting, I did directing, I did editing. And then film kind of segued into video, and then I made my way into 3D animation and that kind of stuff, and doing, you know, graphics for commercials and television shows. And I also was a post-producer for a bunch of different reality television shows.
Mm.
But I always on the side, I did comics.
So it's interesting that a lot of comic strip artists, they start doing it, you know, from, you know, their early 20s, or and they haven't really done much of anything else, and you're coming at it a little bit differently. You've worked in these other media. You have that exposure and that familiarity.
Yeah, I'd say the majority of cartoonists that are syndicated had other things to do or still do. I'd say the you know, ones that get lucky and, you know, come out of the chute and with a syndicated comic, I'd say that's the exception rather than the rule.
Mm. Okay. Now, I'm just curious. Do you have children?
Yes.
You do? What do you have?
I have three kids.
Oh.
Their ages are, my oldest is 17. My middle child, daughter, is 15, and my youngest is 12, soon to be 13.
An endless source of inspiration, I guess.
Yeah, well, they're not as weird as I am, though.
How do they respond? Because this is such a different strip from Heart of the City. How do they respond when they first started seeing Leo? Were they surprised what was coming out of Dad's mind?
Oh, no, they know I'm bizarre.
Oh.
You know, they were wondering what took so long.
Really?
You know, this is just the side of my personality that just never made it into Heart of the City. I mean, sometimes it did, and you'll still see, you know, examples of it in Heart of the City, but Heart of the City is a completely different strip from this, which is, you know, the only way I can do two comic strips, because, you know, I sit down and I write Heart, and it's in a completely different way. And then when I sit down and write Leo, it's like I turn the switch completely 180 degrees the other direction, and you know, and that's the only way I could do it. I'm telling you, I couldn't do two script-driven comics because I think that the dialogue would just be too similar.
Mm-hmm. And how many papers is Heart in?
Heart's in about 100 papers.
Okay. Now, were you able to make a living off of Heart before you started Leo? And now that you've got the two strips, Heart's in 100, Leo's in about 250 or so,
yeah.
Is it safe to assume you're making your living off this full-time now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's what I do, full-time comic stripping. I never bathe. I, you know, I clothes all the time. I draw, draw, draw.
Have you gotten to the point where you've had to bring on an assistant to help with this?
No. I couldn't imagine somebody working for me. I can barely stand it. You know, I think that, oh, yeah, it might be better, you know, if I pull somebody in to do inking on Heart or something like that. But then I realized I'm such a control freak, which is the whole reason I do comics for a living. I have complete control over these people's worlds, and they don't complain.
Mm.
But I think that I would end up putting just as much work in, you know, standing over somebody's shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
While they do it, so I don't think that's a good idea, and I love it. I love it.
What do you think it is that was so different about Heart and Leo? I mean, Heart, 100 papers is respectable, but it's, as you say, I mean, it's not, you can't earn a full-time living mm-hmm. from that. And then Leo comes along, and inside of a year, I mean, it's just exploded. What do you think that you learned from doing Heart, or you know, why did one explode and one, you know, is more of a modest?
I don't know. You know, that's a great unknown. I mean, if we knew that, we could all do it.
Mm.
You know, you could sit down and do it, and the guy across the street could do it. I mean, you just don't know. What you have to do is just be truthful to yourself and write what you know. You know, you heard it a million times, and you throw it out there and hope it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't overthink this stuff too much, or you can't say, oh, well, what does the market need? Because it doesn't work. You know, that always fails. Maybe not always, but, you know, it's really, really difficult in the comic strip business to streamline a comic strip to what you think the market wants. You just kind of, what I wanted to do, like I said, was sit down and you know, bring something that I felt was different to the comics pages. Something we haven't seen in a while was a pantomime strip, and something with a little bit of a darker edge. You know, pantomime strips are generally really, really soft, you know, conservative gags. And this one is not that.
No.
And so, you know, I just thought it would be different.
Now, two of my favorite Leos to date, I think they were both Sundays. One was the appearance by the character, the boys from Boondocks, There Goes the Neighborhood, where Leo's family, the moving truck backs up.
They think There Goes the Hood.
There Goes the Hood, I'm sorry, thank you. Yes. And then the one, and it's, and you have to help me with this, because I don't have a stack of them in front of me, but it was also a Sunday strip, and I think Leo was using a spy scope to, like, peek into another strip, like, right? And that was that the one that was turned sideways?
Yeah, actually, I do occasionally draw Sunday sideways.
Right.
Another little quirkiness to Leo, only because I get in my mind this vision of somebody in their house having to turn their entire comics page sideways, and it gives me like a feeling of power. I just feel that some strips lay out better that way.
Mm-hmm.
And why not?
And the moving truck. I think anyway. You tell me if I'm wrong. It seems like you are definitely one of the artists who has benefited from Boondocks taking either semi or permanent retirement.
And Foxtrot.
And Foxtrot, right, going from 7 days to 1. Did you hear anything from anyone in the business about the Boondocks showing up? It was just so spot on.
No, Aaron Magruder is off doing his Hollywood thing. I don't think he talks to anybody. I think he's just totally wrapped up in doing his show. So he, I doubt that he even saw it. I mean, somebody may have shown it to him, but, I didn't hear anything from him. But that's a whole other world, that Hollywood thing, and it's very, very consuming, so.
And you've done other character crossovers. I'm thinking of Mary Worth in particular.
Yeah.
That had me on the floor. Have you had feedback from other artists whose characters?
Yeah, actually, I did. I had put Mark Trail in one of my strips.
Mm-hmm.
Leo was playing with a box of mice, and one of the mice chewed through the corner of the panel and made its way over to Mark Trail's panel. And Mark Trail was up on the chair screaming, holding his pants up, classic, I'm afraid of mice pose.
Right.
And I got contacted from the guy that draws Mark Trail. I'm not familiar with his name right now, but his accountant contacted me. Wanted a copy of that signed. Actually, I'm going to send him the original. I just haven't done it yet. I'm just so busy. That's on my list of things to do. I also heard from Jeff Keane when I had done a knockoff on Family Circus. I had Little Billy does that thing where he runs all over the place, and there's a little beeline behind him.
Leaving the footprints, right.
Right, and he has made his way over to Leo, and Leo packed him up in a box and was shipping him off to the home for wayward boys. he wrote to me.
Two other more modern strips, Get Fuzzy and Pearls Before Swine, frequently break that wall crossing into other strips. Is there a danger of, at any point, of there being too much of that, or can, I mean, I never get tired of it, but...
Right, yes, I agree with you. Yes, it does, it can be overdone, and I've been kind of stepping back from that a little bit, because, first of all, it's not a bottomless pit,
Right.
You can only do so many comic strips, and you can't do comic strips that are unknown to the general public, so there's like a handful of comic strips that you can rip on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I try not to go to the well too often.
For some reason I'm drawing a blank. I had interviewed Patrick. The fellow who does Mutz.
Oh, Patrick McDonald.
Patrick McDonald for a biography of Will Eisner 2 or 3 years ago, and he was telling me that his Sunday strip is pretty much always a tip of the hat to some artist or some other strip, but not in the same way that you and...
Yeah, he has a what they call a throwaway panel.
Right.
That they use to, as a face a space filler, and he always gives a nod to some artist, not necessarily always a comic strip artist, but some artist in that first panel.
Mm-hmm.
Where you would see the title, Mutz.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And
that's more of an homage.
How do you feel about this? I've heard this from several artists over the years, and I know. I mean, it's no big secret that there's a younger generation of artists that's not real happy about how some of these older strips are being kept alive on life support, and they keep eating up space on these newspaper pages that continues to shrink. Do you have any thoughts on that yourself, as someone who's got two strips and one particularly on the rise?
How do I feel about, you mean, dead cartoonist strips?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
if they want to quit, that's okay with me. as long as the reading public wants to see it, what are you going to do? I mean, it's syndication is a business, and as long as the newspapers are willing to pay for them, there's not much you can do about it, and the reading public wants to see them. That's what are you going to do? I mean, I I wouldn't pass on my comics to anybody because I don't think that anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not those kind of strips. They're very, very much mired in my personality. So I don't think, I mean, they could do it, but I don't think it would be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, syndication is a business. As long as the newspapers are willing to pay for it and the readers want to read the older strips, then that's just the way it is. You know, you got to find a way around it. And that's, I think, giving newspapers something that they want to print more.
See, I mean, the thing that I guess it's Berkeley Breathed who was the first to really speak out against, in favor of having the dead cartoonist strips be pushed out of the way. But the thing that I always felt up until recently, just the last couple of years, was there hadn't been enough strips that had really come forward to make the case that these should replace the older ones. You know, there have been a lot of strips.
Well, it's moot. I mean,
yeah.
What's the point of, you know, complaining about it? I mean, first of all, nobody listens to cartoons anyway. You know, we can rip on them in our own strips, and, you know, and people will agree with us and so forth, but that's about all you can do. I mean, you know, newspaper editors are going to do what they want, and syndicates are going to continue to syndicate, you know, dead cartoonist strips and repeat strips.
Right. But, I mean, there's this generation, I mean, the way I look at it anyway, there's this generation in the last, 5 years, let's say. There's Leo, Pearls, Get Fuzzy, Mutz goes back a little further. Some of these strips, I mean, they are as revolutionary in some ways as, you know, Farside and Hobbs were, Calvin Hobbs were at a period of time. But there really hadn't been much in between that made you say, oh, I got to just push all this out of the way and take up, you know, this new stuff. But now it seems like there's been some really fresh work being done.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think that if Pearls Before Swine is certainly an example of that, and other strips. But they're doing well. You know, the newer strips are doing well. It's slow but sure. I mean, that's just the way it, I mean, the fact that I've gotten to 250 newspapers so quickly is just really an oddity within the business. It's luck, it's timing, it's having a decent strip. The fact that two, you know, major players quit, and you have to give a tip of the hat to Bill Ament. I mean, he could have run repeats.
Mm-hmm.
He could have said, let's go back to start with Foxtrot, and newspapers would have bought it. And, you know, I'm not saying that all the newspapers would have run it, but certainly a large amount of his list would have stayed, but he didn't want to do that.
Mm.
You know, and I'd say, you know, that's and I certainly benefited from that. And, you know, I think he's to be commended for that.
Now, some of the guys who created some of the bigger strips of the last 20 years, Farside and Calvin Hobbs, Doonesbury, I mean, they've struggled with a couple of things over time. They've struggled with the demand to be fresh all the time, and they've taken sabbaticals, and ultimately, in the case of Watterson and Larson, have given up entirely. Trudeau always, you know, every so often takes a long sabbatical, and then they've also dealt with the demands to commercialize their products, which Trudeau's probably given in a little more on than the other two. You seem to be on this arc, this upward swing. Have you thought about, as things, you know, opportunities might come along, what you're willing to do and what you're not with Leo?
Oh, licensing or anything else right now. I just want to turn the best possible strip that I can. I'm worried about building my list and maintaining it.
Now, I did see where you were asked, I guess in a syndicate interview, about how you would feel about maybe Leo translating to like an animated series. And you have that film and video experience, so I would almost guess it'd be almost disingenuous for you to say it hadn't crossed your mind.
Oh, I mean, it crossed my mind, but that was not how I designed the strip. Like,
mm-hmm.
Aaron Magruder will tell you that when he designed his strip, it was always with animation in mind.
Oh.
And that was his ultimate goal. My goal is to do a comic strip. And if it can segue into television or movies or whatever, or internet you know, pieces or cell phone animations, you know, that's fine. I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. But that was not how the strip was designed. It was designed to be just a strip.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's not to say that I wouldn't consider anything that came down the pike. You know, that's still not where my head is right now.
And then last question, when will we see the first collection of Leo? When?
I'm working on the book cover right now,
The
first collection, and then that's due at the end of January, and I really have to sit down and do that. The first collection probably won't be out till October of this year.
Oh, great. Do you have a title?
Or maybe the end of summer. I'm not sure. Tentatively, I do have a title. It's called Leo, Stave 1. Happiness is a Squishy Cephalopod. And I have to figure out a cover. And a cephalopod, of course, is an octopus or a squid or
mm-hmm.
any other many-legged sea creature.
A creature that frequently appears in the strip.
Right.
Yeah. And of
course, is a play on the best-selling book by Charles Schulz called "Happiness Is a Warm
Puppy." Blanket. A warm puppy, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I lied. I have one last question. Why is the character's name spelled L-I-O? And it always seems to be in uppercase as well.
I just like the name Leo. I wanted something short and sweet and just clean because that's the nature of the strip. There's no dialogue, so I didn't want to have a clunky name. It was just a short name. I got the name Leo from a couple of different sources. Actually, one of the creators of the atomic weapon, one of the inventors, was named Leo.
Oh.
And actually, there's this. Have you heard of cartoonist Edward Gorey?
Sure. Yeah.
He had this thing called the Gashly Crumb Tinies.
Hmm.
Kind of like a poem.
I don't know that.
Okay, well, it'll do something like, you know, it'll go through the alphabet, you know, and it says, you know, like A is for Amy who fell down the stairs, B is for Basil assaulted by bears, C is for Carla who wasted away, D is for Desmond thrown out of a sleigh, and it just shows these illustrations of kids being killed a whole bunch of different ways. But there's L is for Leo in here. It says L is for Leo who swallowed some tack. And that cinched it for me. If Edward Gorey can use Leo, so can I. But I chose a different spelling, only because I think it sets it apart. It makes it, and it just has it has a almost like a foreign look to it.
Hmm.
And the whole concept is pretty foreign to the comic stages. Right.
Yeah,
now.
It's very European. I mean, in a lot of ways.
Well. It's odd.
Yeah. Okay, it's odd.
Definitely odd.
Well,
I
was.
I try not to be Zippy the Pinhead odd because I think that's over the top. But I'm sure that there are a number of strips that strike people as being over the top.
All right. I just wanted on record that I said European and you said odd. That's all. I don't want to be blamed for. I don't want to be blamed for odd or suggesting the Europeans are odd. Mark Dottulli, thank you so much for participating in this Mr. Media interview. We appreciate your time and look forward to many, many years of great Leo strips.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I hope so, too.
Thank you.